Okay, good morning, everyone. So it's a great privilege to be here with all of you today, and what I'd like to try to do over the course of the day is the first two shiurim will be a little bit more will be focused on really the topic, I think, is raising healthy and inspired children. So I think, as Rabbi Winter mentioned, these are going to be suggestions and ideas. And, you know, the unique part about relationships in general is that they are organic. And because they are organic, no two relationships are the same. Just like in the realm of shalom bayis, no two marriages are the same. So the truth is, with raising children, no home is the same, no child is the same. We're going to discuss. So obviously, when we speak about the concept of raising healthy and inspired children, we're kind of taking a little bit of an aerial panoramic view, recognizing that it might not address the specific intricacies of your home, of your children, of your circumstances, but there are general ideas that apply to all of us in the realm of chinuch. So for our first topic, for our first part today, I want to begin, the truth is, which is probably the beginning of every single chinuch shir, which is the pasuk from Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech, you know, King Solomon, the wisest of all men, so really knew what he was talking about. So Shlomo HaMelech writes in Mishlei, Chanuch lenar al pi darko, teach a child according to his way. So Shlomo HaMelech, in that pasuk, the truth is, it's amazing how one verse could really capture the totality of everything one needs to be successful in educating children. But I'd like to spend a little bit of time, actually, the truth is, this pasuk, this verse is going to be the springboard for this class, and the Meir Hashem, the second one as well. But in order to really get us started, we need to ask ourselves what the concept of chinuch, what the concept of it is. When you got chinuch, how would you define the word chinuch?
Education.
So amazingly enough, chinuch is possibly everything but education, right? Why? I want to share with you something incredible. There is a magnificent sefer called Chovas HaTalmidim. Chovas HaTalmidim was written by a great tzaddik, Rav Konomis Kalman Shapira, known as the Piagetzna. The Piagetzna was a Hasidic Rebbe before the war, during the war as well. The Piagetzna is probably most well known for his sefer Ish Kodesh. So remember, again, the Piagetzna Rebbe was taken with his Hasidim to the Warsaw Ghetto, and every single Shabbos, almost every single Shabbos, between the years of 1939 and 1943, the Rebbe would gather a minyan, took place in different places, in different circumstances, depending what was happening in the Warsaw Ghetto that particular week, and he would deliver a drasha. An inspiring sermon to them, and it's incredible. If you learn his drushos, the tone changes dramatically between 1939 and 1943, and he's deported. In the beginning, it's optimism, we're going to get through this. In the end, it's accepting their fate, that they're going to die al Kiddush Hashem, but accepting it with a recognition that God is still good and God still has a plan. It's overwhelming. After Shabbos, it's actually a little bit of his start. Well, just as an aside, a little bit of historical debate, someone wrote down the drasha. There's a historical debate of whether or not it was the Piagetzna, bless you, or whether or not it was his gabbai or someone else. But someone wrote down the drasha after Shabbos. The Rebbe, realizing that he was not going to survive the war, ordered that they be buried in a canister in the ghetto. And then after the war, there was a Polish farmer, a Polish peasant, who was sifting through rubble to try to find something. He found the canister with Hebrew writing on it, gave it to actually notified someone in the Jewish council in Warsaw, and they discovered the Piagetzna's writings. It was compiled into a sefer titled Ish Kodesh, Holy Fire. That was not the Piagetzna did not give a title to the sefer, but you could understand again ultimately why the sefer was titled in that way. The Piagetzna, truth is, you could devote a symposium and an entire day to the Piagetzna, perhaps one of the most inspiring and overwhelming Jewish personalities in the last 100 years. A man who, despite facing incredible adversity, gave up himself to his constituents literally until his very last breath. But before the war, the Piagetzna had authored a number of other svarim. One of them titled Chovas HaTalmidim. So Chovas HaTalmidim, as you can imagine by the title, seeks out the responsibility of the students. And the Piagetzna highlights something incredible, which is often we think that in the educational process, the responsibility rests upon the teacher. Right? Anyone who's in the education profession realizes sometimes you either dread or you look forward to parent-teacher conferences, right? Why? If the kid is doing great, fantastic, it's going to be wonderful. If the kid's struggling, so you're not sure what the parents are going to say, because there are some parents, and again, we'll talk about this more, who kind of go in with the idea, I send my kid to school, I pay an exorbitant amount of money for yeshiva day school tuition, you better get it right. But the Piaget's understood, you could have the most skilled teacher, but if the student doesn't want to engage, if the student doesn't want to learn, the most skilled teacher will not be able to make one shred of difference. By the way, the proof to that idea that you could have the most incredible teacher, but if the student doesn't want to learn, nothing doing is who? The most incredible example of this? Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu is the most, remember again, most of the Chumash is focused on Klal Yisrael's recalcitrance to take direction from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest teacher. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest prophet. If you're not interested, you're not interested. So therefore, again, the Piaget wrote an entire sefer. We're learning it now. We have a shir in the morning. Before that family, we have a Musar Seder. We're learning Chovas HaTalmidim, because it's not just good for young students. It's good for older students as well. This speaks out the responsibilities of the student. What do you need to do in order to refine yourself to be able to learn? In the introduction to this incredible sefer, he has a chapter. The title of the chapter is Siach im Hamalamdim V'Avos HaTalmidim, a conversation with parents and with teachers. So again, the sefer is devoted to the Piagetzna talking to the students. The introduction is a conversation between the Piagetzna and parents and teachers. And this, I will tell you, I happen to think in general, one day if I open up a school, right, I would make this part of the core curriculum, meaning children should learn Chovas HaTalmidim, which is a separate issue as to how it is, I'm going to go off on just a moment over here, outrageous that Musar is not part of the curriculum for our children. We teach them everything, but yet we don't teach them Musar. You can't really be a fully developed Jew without Musar. But the truth is not knock you over the head, Musar, you're terrible. That's not good Musar. That doesn't work for our generation. The kind of Musar that builds you up, the kind of Musar that teaches you that you could be more. So in this introduction, the Piagetzna has a very open and frank conversation in writing with parents and with teachers. And the first thing he starts off with is defining the word chinuch. He's defining the word chinuch. So I want to quote you just a few pieces. The Piagetzna says, he says, I want to tell you what chinuch is not. He says, chinuch is not pedagogia. It's a quote. He says, it's not pedagogy. He says, chinuch does not mean a curriculum. Chinuch, those are all important things. We're going to discuss that. He says, so what is the word chinuch? And he quotes something amazing. He says, we find the word chinuch used in the Torah. Where do we find the word chinuch used in the Torah? We find Chanukas HaMizbeach. Right? When speaking about the exemptions from going out to war. So we often translate the word chinuch as dedication. Right? The dedication of the altar in the Mishkan. Who is the man who built a home and did not yet dedicate it? So he could come back from war. So the Piagetzna says something amazing. I want to quote to you. He says, teva li'atzmo hi tevas chinuch. The word chinuch is a very interesting word. The ne'emra al hotzas hachshara asher ba'adam obikli minakoach el hapoel. He says the word chinuch means the process by which you take something that is potential and you bring it out. The word chinuch, says the Piagetzna, means the actualization of potential within something. So before we get to the realm of children, understand the context. Remember again, Chanukas HaMizbeach, the dedication of the altar, means the altar is a physical thing. What's the goal of the altar? What's the goal of the altar? What do you do on the altar? Sacrifices, right? Lashon, right? Remember again, what do we call a sacrifice in Hebrew? A karban. From the Lashon of, Shoresh of, Karov. So ultimately, again, the goal of the altar, the potential of the altar, is to bring the Jew closer to God. Chanukas HaMizbeach is where the chinuch of the Mizbeach, you actualize the potential, ultimately again, of the altar. Where else do we have a Chanukas HaBayis? What's a Chanukas HaBayis? Right? When do you make a Chanukas HaBayis? What, it's to show off your granite countertops, right? It's to show off, right, the big, beautiful living room. Why do you make a Chanukas HaBayis? Chanukas, yes?
To to dedicate a new home to Torah study and community. And
beautiful, but there's one step before you dedicate it. It's to actualize potential. Why does a Jew have a home? So, you know, the Stipler says that the Jew has a home because you need somewhere to put your mezuzah. Right? Where is he going to put your mezuzah if you don't have a home? Stipler wasn't much for jokes. That wasn't a joke. What he was saying is, there are certain aspects of my spirituality that could only be actualized through a home. I want to do hachnasas arachim. How do I do hachnasas arachim? I want to be a hospitable person. I want to open my home. I want to open my table to people. You can't do that without a home. A chanukas habayis is where I make the statement of, this is not just going to be a home. I'm going to bring out the spiritual dimension within this home. Says the Piagetzna, the process of chinuch is the unlocking of the potential within something. It's not education. It's unlocking the potential in the altar. It's unlocking the potential in my home. And therefore, again, using Shlomo HaMelech's pasuk, Chanuch Lena Pidako means unlocking the potential within my child. Which in and of itself, if you think about it, is such a dramatic paradigm shift. Because so often we are focused, and this is true in a school setting and other settings as well, on education. But the truth is, chinuch, says the Piagetzna, is not education. Chinuch is the process through which you unlock the potential in a child. Education might be one aspect of that. Educating a child is one way in which you unlock the potential. But the process of chinuch ultimately means the unlocking of the potential within the child. So how do you unlock the potential? So the truth is, I'm going to focus on this over the course of the first two classes. Over this class, I want to approach some of the more mechanistic aspects of how we unlock this incredible potential. So there is a beautiful sefer by, it's really more a pamphlet by Rav Volbi. So Rav Volbi Zecher Tzadik Livracha wrote a pamphlet called Zriya Ubinyan B'chinuch. And I want to bring out a couple of ideas from Rav Volbi because I think they're incredible. They're incredible in terms of teachers, but I don't think we're here really in the realm of teachers. I think we're here much more focusing a little bit more as the concept of parents. So Rav Volbi, and again, I'm going to be makatsa, I'm really going to truncate his ideas. I'm not going to do them justice, but just to give you a little bit of a feel for what they are. Rav Volbi points out that he really builds on the fact that in Shemona Esrei itself, we find two different verbs associated with God. In the bracha of Yerushalayim, Irecha Barachamim Tasha, when we see God's rebuilding of Jerusalem, so we say, Baruch Ata Hashem Bonei Yerushalayim. We call God as the builder of Jerusalem. And then the following bracha, Es Tzamach David, so we say, Baruch Ata Hashem Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. So God will rebuild Jerusalem, and literally matzmiach, so the English translation often is, who makes the glory of salvation flourish. But matzmiach literally means to sprout. So Rav Volbi understands that in the world of growth, there are two different forms of growth, or two different ways in which growth is actualized. There's binyan, and there's zriya. There's building, and there's planting. And Rav Volbi understands that these two pieces are perhaps the most profound concrete parts of the chinuch process. He says we have to build our children and we have to plant. So he gives examples. What does it mean to build? So he says something, as I want to quote to you. He says, first of all, just to understand the distinction between the concepts, he writes, Tzmicha ubinyan elu shtei pu'ulos shonos. The concept of building and the concept of planting are really two different concepts. Smicho, hitalich tiv'i ba'olam hazeh. So what's planting? How do you plant something? So think about this from your extensive farming experience, right? What do you do when you want to plant something? You drop in a seed, and then what?
Water it,
and then what?
Wait,
right? So the interesting part about planting is you have to do some work on the front end. But then the seed kind of germinates on its own, right? That's why you have to have incredible emuna to be a farmer. Because many of us are micromanagers. You can't really be a micromanager if you're a farmer. Because you could do your piece, but then at a certain point in time, the seed kind of has to do its thing. And I don't control, I could water and I could put the miracle grow and I could do whatever it is. But at the end of the day, there's so many parts of that process that I just don't control. That's Zriya. He says, Binyan, who davar sha'adam osa. Building something, on the other hand, is something you do. Maniach yisod, you put down a foundation. Va'achakach maniach nidbach al gabi nidbach ad shabayis muchon. So how do you build? So you again, building, you put down a foundation. After you put down a foundation, you put a layer of bricks, another layer of bricks, the roof, the this, the windows. Building is a very hands-on process. Planting is I drop the seed, I go and I do whatever I need to do to ensure that the seed grows, but there's a lot of stuff that kind of happens on its own. And says Rav Volbi, within these two concepts, we capture really the entirety of chinuch. Let's start by focusing a little bit on binyan. So what are examples of binyan? So the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Huaya Omer, Bein Chamesh Shanam LeMikra, at the age of 5 years old, the child should begin to learn Chumash. Ben Esther the Mishnah, 10 years old Mishnah, Ben Shlosh Esrei the Mitzvos, 13 years old Bar Mitzvah, Ben Chamesh Esrei the Talmud. At the age of 15 is when you start to learn Gemara. So leaving aside Chazal's pedagogical process, what is the idea that Chazal are telling us? We have to teach our children skills. And this is an incredibly important idea. A child needs to realize, you know, this is probably not like an educationally popular thing to say, but I'm a very big believer that the least important part of school is what your children actually learn. The most important part of school are social relationships and a healthy sense of self. A child gains self-confidence in school. That's what they're supposed to. You have a lifetime to absorb information. But how does a child gain self-confidence in school? By being able to do well on the tasks that are given to them. If a child doesn't absorb the necessary skill sets, a child feels like a failure. And when a child feels like a failure, that's when all kinds of things begin to happen. My topic is not teens at risk. I think someone else is talking about that. But you understand that if you speak to children who are struggling with substance abuse, with Judaism, with all kinds of things, almost always traces its way back to academic failure. When you feel, no one wants to feel like a failure. And when you feel like a failure in the classroom, you're going to look for ways to feel fulfilled outside. So Chazal are telling us, you have to make sure that your children have the proper skills. Now, this is an incredible idea because sometimes we as parents think that we've kind of outsourced. And even though the pasuk says, "Vishinamtam levanecha," right? It's my job to educate my child. We've outsourced it, and we have. We've outsourced it to day schools, to yeshivos. But just because my child receives their primary education outside of my home does not free me from the responsibility of the parent making sure that my child is absorbing the proper skills. Does my child know how to read? Is his or her kriya skills up to date? I can't tell you how important this is. There are children, I don't know how it happens, but there are children who go through our yeshiva and day school system and break their teeth on reading the Siddur. It's a school's responsibility, but it's also a parent's responsibility to make sure, does my child know how to read? Does my child know how to go ahead and translate the pasuk in Chumash? Does my child know how to read the Mishnah? Now, sometimes it's difficult because maybe as a parent, I didn't get the education I'm giving my child, which happens often, which is an incredible thing when a parent gives their child more. So again, as a parent, and I have to figure that out, either I have to make sure that I'm at least on the same grade level as my child in terms of my learning, or I have to outsource that to someone else to make sure that my child is getting the skills. That's what Chazal are saying. There's a certain age for reading. There's a certain age for Kriya. There's a certain age for Avara. There's a certain age for Mishnah. And I have to make sure that my child is getting to that level. Similarly, again, the Gemara Maseches Sukkah writes, Katan hayodea ledaber, once a child knows how to speak, Aviv lamdo Torah kriyashma. Parent has to teach their child Torah and Shema. What does it mean, teach my child Torah? Torah Mayi? Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Marasha Kilas Yaakov. Kriyashma Mayi Pasuk Rishon. This is the binyan. I have to build my child. It is not enough to love your child. We're going to speak about loving your child. It's very important to love your child, but you have to give your child the necessary skills to be successful in life. Those skill sets evolve as the child gets older. But from Rav Volbi's perspective, the binyan skills means reading, Shmir Mikra, Mishnah, all the different things. That's the binyan piece. The binyan piece and this whole thing is much easier because it's very intuitive. I have to make sure that my child's skill sets to be successful are building. And this is incredibly important, you know, especially in today's day and age. We have to be actively involved in our children's chinuch. We have to be actively involved in our children's education and to understand what they're learning, how they're learning it, are they up to par, where they're supposed to be in their grade level, in every different thing. Because if they fall behind, that's when those issues of self-confidence come up. And when those issues of self-confidence come up, once a child falls behind in self-confidence, it's very difficult to catch them up. You know, you could catch your kid up with math, and you could catch your kid up with history and with literature. Self-confidence is very difficult to catch a child up with. And a lot of times, children who struggle with self-confidence become young adults who struggle with self-confidence, become adults who struggle with self-confidence. The binyan, providing the skill set layer after layer after layer, is an indispensable part of our child's maturation. But that's the easy part. I'm sure all of us know that. The more difficult part is really when it comes to the zriya, the planting of the seeds. And this, the truth is what I'd like to kind of spend the majority of the time on. What time do we have until now? Okay, we have a little bit of time still. So what I'd like to focus on is on the zriya. So I want to quote you from Mavolbi again. And this is so beautiful. He says, Davar muvanhu, she'siach habanana, according to Mavolbi, tzarech tipol achar me'asher itza tapuach. You know, when it comes to planting, you have to know what you're planting, right? Planting an apple tree is different than planting bananas. In negadol siach bananos ve'itz tapuchim ve'nanik l'shtem tipul achot. If you go ahead and you treat the banana tree, banana bush, plant, banana plant, right, like the apple tree, right? One thing is for sure, which is, one of them will grow, one of them won't grow. In other words, you have to treat bananas and apples differently. And if you try to plant them in the same way, it's not going to work. V'ulai, shneem yachad gam lo yetznichu pri. Or it could be that you'll mess up on both of them. Neither will sprout fruit. Kach gam im yeladim. The same is true with children. Ani chayev ladas mahin atchon. So we'll get to this later. But the zriya is this idea of the planting of the seeds. So as opposed to binyan, which is very concrete, and as opposed to binyan, which is exceptionally clear, zriya is a little bit more complicated. So let's talk about this for a moment. Zriya, explains Rav Volbi, are the things we do day in and day out, which plant seeds in our children, which often don't take root until sometime later on. You know, the most incredible thing, and this is true in chinuch of your children, and if you're an educational professional, is that life, successful chinuch, is all about planting seeds. What do I mean by that? You know, if you're an instant gratification person, then farming is not the profession for you. Why? Because like we said before, you put the seed in the ground, and then what? Then what?
Wait.
How long do I have to wait for? How long? It depends. Because, you know, some seeds take root immediately. Some seeds take root. I'll tell you an incredible story. When I was first married, I was learning in Kollel, and I had a job on Sundays teaching in Hebrew school. And I taught brachos, not meseches brachos, like brachos, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shakol Mi'ah B'Dvaro, and so on and so forth. And, you know, Sunday school, whoever came up with this idea, it's terrible, right? Because, again, these are children who are in public school, and now their Judaism is you have to come to school on Sunday morning. So ever thought that this would somehow engender a love of Yiddishkeit within children? I don't know. It doesn't, right? And my heart used to go out because these kids, like all their friends are doing whatever on Sunday morning, and they're mamish, like sitting in class with me. They figured, all right, I'm here, you're here, let's learn something together. So you see on brachas, and I tried to make it fun by bringing in food, so at least it was a little blah, 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 fine. And it always bothered me because, you know, the way it worked for a lot of these kids is that, unfortunately, once they got to Bar Bat Mitzvah, you know, Baruch Shepatrani was not just said by the father, it was said by the kids also, right? I'm done. I got to Bar Bat Mitzvah, I'm done. So it's an incredible story. So this, I did this when I was a young man, right, first married. Probably 10 years later, I'm at a chasana, and this young man comes over to me, this is Rabbi Silber. And generally, I'm not, it's occupational hazard, but I'm not so good with names. Faces, usually I'm good with. Names, a little bit more challenging. But I managed not to recognize this young man. He said, you don't remember me? And I hate it when people do that. I don't, you remember my name? Remember? Said, no, I have to be honest, because I had no clue. He said, I was in your Sunday school class at so-and-so. I said, wow. He said, I have to tell you a story. He said, I had absolutely nothing growing up. Absolutely nothing in my high school. He said, I went to college. One time, a friend went ahead and dragged me to a Hillel on a Friday night. And we're sitting there. And I'm waiting for the first opportunity to run out. And then the rabbi said, Hamotzi. And I knew the bracha of Hamotzi. And that was the first time in my life, he said, that I felt that I was connected to something. I never felt connected to anything, but I knew the blessing on the bread. That's Zriya. Zriya means sometimes you plant seeds. You don't even realize you're planting seeds, and they may take a decade to germinate. But we plant seeds every single day with our children. You have a bad day at work, and you come home. How you enter into the house after a bad day, is there a scowl? Is there negativity? That's a seed that you plant. You know, Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livrach, the Rashi of Torah V'Das, used to always say to young men who were learning the Kol, he said, when you come home, he said, it's a terrible thing to come home and you're starving. What happens if you come home and you're starving? So we all know this. What happens? I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to see anyone. Let me eat something. I'll be a nice guy after I eat something. So Rav Pam used to tell his Talmidim, take an extra apple with you. Eat the apple on your way home. So you should come home and be a mensch. You should be a mensch to your wife. You should be a mensch to your children. Why? Because how you walk in the house and treat your spouse, you're planting a seed for your children. Stress comes up in every single home. How do parents deal with stress? And by the way, this is stress and everything, because we all know, if there's one thing that every single parent knows, it's what? Your children see everything. They even know the conversations. They know the conversations they're not supposed to hear, right? And as the best parents who try to hide everything, you're driving and someone cuts you off. How you react in that moment plants a seed. If you start yelling, I'm not even talking about using choice words, which is always a bad idea. But if you start yelling or you engage in even a minimal amount of road rage, that's planting a seed. How you go ahead and conduct yourself when you're checking out at the supermarket and your kids are with you. Do you say a thank you to the cashier? Do you acknowledge their humanity? How you pass people on shop? All of these things, every single... You know what the most difficult part of parenting is? The most difficult part is you could take a vacation from your job, but you can never take a vacation from parenting. Because every single thing you do, you are planting a seed. And there are some good seeds, and there are some not good seeds. But all of those seeds take root. That's the difficulty with Zriya. See, Binyan is very concrete. Binyan is simple. I have to make sure my child's on reading level. Make sure my child's learning Mishnah, Gemara, whatever it is that they're learning. That's Binyan. Zriya is certainly this reality that anything and everything I do plants a seed in my child's maturation. I have an argument with my spouse in front of the children, which is never good. There's strained shalom bias in my home. I don't speak the right way. I don't watch the right things. I don't have the right kinds of friends. All of these things. You know, I have to tell you, everything. And again, you know, the great part about being a scholar in residence is I could come and say something and then go home. But you understand, even in today's day and age, filtered internet is obvious. But forget about filtered internet for just a moment. What magazines and periodicals do you allow into your home? Do you know, I'm not an old man, but the world today is dramatically different. The standards of appropriateness are dramatically different. It's hard even to find a newspaper today that you would be comfortable leaving out on your kitchen counter that you want your children to see. I want to tell you something amazing. I get the Wall Street Journal at home because generally I feel it's a good solid paper. But you know, it's a good way to call it. Last week, you know, the Pope convened a meeting of the bishops about sex abuse in the church. And it was front line, like big bold letters, sex abuse in the church. I thought to myself, like, and again, I tried, I'm a big believer in sheltering until you no longer have to shelter. Some parents have this, I think, erroneous idea that we should expose our children to all the things because they're going to get there anyway. Yeah, they'll get there anyway. Keep them pure and keep them as innocent as possible for as long as you can. You obviously have to make them aware about certain dangers in the world because otherwise they'd be irresponsible. But again, you have to realize everything is planting a seed. Everything that happens, every way I talk, everything that I do, everything that they see on the coffee table, all of that plants the seeds for our children. And that's incredibly overwhelming. Because suddenly what this means is to be a good parent and to be an impactful parent suddenly is no longer just about what it is that I'm doing for my children. But it's also everything about what I'm doing for myself. And I'll illustrate this to you with a different idea. There is, I'm going to come back to Ravolbi in just a moment, but there is an incredible and beautiful insight by the Lublin Rav, Rameir Shapira. The Lublin Rav writes as follows. He quotes the idea by the Kruvim. Torah tells us, and this in general is a fascinating idea, that we just finished the parashos of the Mishkan, that on the lid of the ark, on the lid of the Aron, you had to make two kruvim, two cherub-like figures. What's incredibly amazing about this? What's incredibly amazing is the Torah goes out of its way multiple times to tell me that I'm not allowed to make graven images. Can't make graven images. And yet what does God Himself command me to do? Make graven images. And where do I place these graven images? On top of the ark that sits in the Holy of Holies, that sits in the Kiddush HaKadoshim. It's mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. So the Lublin Rav says something so beautiful. Quotes the Gemara that says that what did the Kruvim, there's an interesting debate as to what these two cherubs looked like. So the Gemara explains, actually quotes over here the Gemara explains that they looked like children. Two children. So the Lublin Rav, two little children, right? Male and female. So the Lublin Rav says something absolutely amazing. He says, in quotes, an interesting halacha. I'm going to quote to you. Matzinu kol klei beis olamim shim ein lahem shel zav osim osan shel kesef. So this is actually an incredible halacha. All of the utensils in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, that are supposed to be made of gold, if you don't have gold, you can make them out of silver. So for example, again, the Shulchan, the table upon which the showbread, Lechem Hapanim, was placed, is made out of gold. If you don't have gold, you can make it out of silver. The altar, if you don't have gold, you can make it out of silver. There is one utensil which, if you don't have gold, you can't make it out of silver. Talmud Lomar, Kruvim Gain. I would have thought that if I don't have gold, I can make the Kruvim, right, the cherubs out of silver. Therefore, again, the Pasuk says, Imeinon Osen Shalzov, Hare Keloke Keza. So the Mechil does a whole drush we're not going to get into now. The Aloch is no. If you don't have gold, you can't make the Kruvim. Everything else in the Beis HaMikdash, that's supposed to be made out of gold. If you don't have gold, you can make it out of silver. When it comes to the Kruvim, they must be made of gold. If you don't have gold, sorry, no runner-up, nothing else. So the Lublin Rav says, why is that? Why is that? So he says something amazing. He says that Kruvim, Misamim ki adua es hayiladim arachim. He says the Kruvim represent our children. And he says, V'yesh remez bedavar. Ki kishem dubar bechinuch hadar atzoyer, chinuch l'tor l'mas and tovim, l'haki mulekayim es mosdos haTorah. So Lublin Rav, because when it comes to the education of our children, ein yotzim yedei chova p'tashlumim ketanim. When it comes to the chinuch of our children, there is no such thing as second best. When it comes to the chinuch of our children, we must give them gold. There is no such thing as, well, if you can't have gold, you have silver. And if you can't have silver, you have copper. And if you can't have copper, you'll have metal. There's no such thing like that. When it comes to the chinuch of our children, there's one standard and one standard only. And that's the gold standard. Betshumas putos, hanesinos, svichos, lios, chashivos, balos, erech rav, zav, dafka. Says Lublin Rav, that's what the Torah is teaching us. The Kruvim represent our children. But when it comes to the effort, again, when it comes to the education of our children, gold and gold only. There's no, I'll try for this, but if I don't get to this, it's this. It has to be the gold standard. But to take the Lublin Rav just a step further and to tie back to Ravalbi, there's something amazing about the Kruvim. If you notice again, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us a number of details regarding the Kruvim. Which is what? Torah has a number of details, but I'll share with you two of them. Number one, Pineyim Ishal Achiv, they faced each other. Uknafayim Parsim Lamala, right? Ultimately, their wings were outstretched. So it's interesting, the Baal Shem Tov comments on this. He says, the Torah is coming to teach us something incredible about ourselves. Pineyim Ishal Achiv means what? Ultimately, we have to have good midos towards one another. Be cognizant to recognize the other. Knafayim Parsim Lamala means what? The wings are upstretched. Now, it's always interesting. I thought to myself, if you were making the Kruvim and you were designing them with their wings, how would you have designed their wings? How would you have designed the wings? I would have designed them at rest by their sides. But that's not how the wings are designed, right? The wings are up. When the wings are up, what does that symbolize? What does that symbolize? A readiness to take flight. What the Kruvim teach us more than anything is that a person has to be growth-oriented in life. And no matter what you've accomplished in life, you have to be ready to take flight and to grow even more. No matter what you've done, there is always more to do. And if we bring these concepts together, we see something amazing. And this is what Ravalbi was describing with Zriya. The Kruvim represent our children. When it comes to our children, we have to give them gold. But the Kruvim also represent us, every human being. And when it comes to the Kruvim, the wings are upright, ready to take flight. If you want to go ahead and raise inspired children, you have to be an inspired parent. If you want to give your children gold, then your wings must always be upright, or I should say outstretched, ready to take flight. It is only if a parent is growth-oriented in every single way, at every single stage, will I raise children who are growth-oriented as well. This is an incredible idea that sometimes you would think it's obvious, but parents sometimes don't understand it, which is too many times parents parent with the motto of do as I say, not as I do. And the truth is, if there's one thing you could count on, which is that will profoundly fail. Whatever you want your child to do, you have to be ready to model for them. That says Ravalbi, that's Zriya. That's the planting of the seeds. The planting of the seeds is, you know, I think most of us would agree that we remember very little of what our parents said. Most times it's like that. But remember a lot of what our parents did. And that's Ravalbi, that's where Zriya comes in. The planting are the things we do day in and day out. On a simple level, a child sees a father get up early to go to davening and go to learn. A child sees a mother who goes ahead and is about, and again, obviously, roles are so different today because we're all juggling a million different things. But a child sees a mother or a father, again, different things are in different homes. I'll give you another simple example. What does Erev Shabbos look like in your house? And I know this is a good time to have this conversation because we've just switched the clock. But you understand that a child gleans their appreciation for Shabbos and for Erev Shabbos. And Rabbi Soloveitchik writes in Al HaTshuva, he says, when I came to America, he says, there are many, many Shomrei Shabbos. He says, what I miss most are the Shomrei Erev Shabbos. He says, in Europe as a child, Erev Shabbos came, and like you felt there was a different aura. In Eretz Yisrael, you could still feel this. But for us, often the great challenge of Erev Shabbos is, Erev Shabbos is manic. Manic. And you know, what do we say to ourselves? Oh, shoot, the clock switched. We have so much more time. You know how this works, right? Somehow, it doesn't make a difference if Shabbos starts at 4 or at 8. It's the same frenetic pace. But understand, you want a child who appreciates Shabbos? What does your Erev Shabbos look like? Are you lighting candles in the 18 minutes? Is it a frenetic rush and everybody's yelling at each other because no one showered yet and it's 20 minutes before Shabbos and there's running and there's this? That's not Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos is benachos. Erev Shabbos is with Seder. Erev Shabbos is with a husband helping a wife helping a husband, children helping parents. That's the Erev Shabbos. You want your children to have an appreciation of Shabbos. Those are the seeds you plant. What does the Shabbos table look like? If everybody's nodding off after the soup, then mamish, a child's not going to have a profound appreciation of Shabbos. If the goal of a successful Shabbos is let's finish lunch as quickly as possible so we can get a 7-hour nap. You know, that's not a Shabbos. First of all, just as an aside, no one ever needs to sleep for more than an hour on a Shabbos afternoon, unless you have a medical condition. Right? An hour's nap is more than enough to be able, and otherwise get more sleep at night. Shabbos is a time for your family. Shabbos is a time, and I'm not saying you have to sit there and learn. You play a board game, you do something. Those are the seeds you plant. When your child sees that on your day off from work, you're not spending it sleeping away, but you're sending it, spending time with them. Those are the seeds that we plant. And by the way, we could spend hours just talking about the seeds. The binyan is the easy part. The seeds are the things we do, and it's difficult because as a parent, I have to live with constant awareness that everything I do and everything I don't do is a planting of the seed. Every single thing is everything that I do is a little drop of the seed into the fertile soil of my child. Sometimes that seed takes root and germinates immediately, and sometimes ultimately, again, it may take years. But once I drop it in the soil, it is there. I'll end off because we'll end this session now, but I'll end off with just one last piece from Rav Volbe, where he writes so beautifully. He says as follows. He's listening to these words. He speaks about the need for both binyan and zriya. And he says, "In nosnim liyevad litzmach ulagadol, mibli livno so-so, yotze pera adam." He says something amazing. He says, if all I do is go ahead and allow the child to go ahead with tzmoach. I do tzmicha, I plant seeds, but there's no binyan. So I plant seeds, but there's no concrete. You understand, by the way, the difference now in Revolbe's, I hope I've done this justice. Meaning, the binyan are the concrete steps that we employ to build our children. The tzmicha are the intangible pieces, the seeds that we drop often by the way we model the proper behavior for our children, by flapping our wings of growth. Those are the seeds we plant. So Revolbe says, if all you do is plant seeds, but there's no structure, there's no binyan, then yosei pera adam. Then a child's going to be, you know, a vildechaya. The child's going to be not going to have any structure. You have to grow up with skills. You have to grow up with framework. On the other hand, he says, if all there is binyan without tzmicha, if all there is the constructive building, but there's no planting of seeds, so listen to what Rav Volbe says. He says, osim mimenu robot. I guess that's Hebrew. Osim mimenu robot. Right? A child who has binyan, but no tzmicha, such a child is a robot. Hatzeiruf shel shnei hadvarim yachot. But bringing both of these concepts together, shel koach hatzmicha u'maaseh habinyan, zehu achinuch. So just to wrap this up, says Rav Volbe, when you take tzmicha and you take binyan together, and I would couple that, again, going back to the Piagetzna, when you understand that your role as a parent is not to educate, but is to bring out the potential within your child. And you use these two processes of binyan and smicha, says Rav Volbe, says the Piagetzna, that's chinuch. So we'll stop over here for now. The next session of Mirtz Hashem, we're going to go into, I felt Rav Volbe was kind of focused a little bit more on some of the practical pieces. And Mirtz Hashem in the second session, we'll deal a little bit more focusing on the child and how to discover who our child really is. Thank you. Sure, go right ahead.